Sounds good.
I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum. Welcome back, Martin.
It's fantastic to be here, Michael.
So you in Chicago or London or Paris, Lyon, Broome, Perth, Fremantle? Where are you going today?
No, none of those places, but I am in Sydney, and I was going to mention this, of course, when we get a little bit, we might touch in passing later in our conversation on the cost of living, Michael, and offer you a few insights from the Eastern Seaboard on that
Oh.
particular one. But yeah, it's good to be here.
Well, we'll throw that in our discussion. But today it's really all about Carmela, Elbow, Roger Cook. We should also mention along the way that there is an election about to happen, I think tomorrow in the Northern Territory. But it's all otherwise happening right now as we speak, Martin, in Chicago at the Democratic Party's convention to nominate their contender for president. And I'm reading from the New York Times. This is live. Vice President Kamala Harris will ceremonially accept the Democratic Party's nomination for president with a call for unity and a warning that Donald J. Trump is an unserious man whose return to the White House could have devastating consequences for the US. According to excerpts of her speech released by her campaign Thursday evening, as we speak, Martin. So, how is it all going for Carmela? What are you making of it? You would love to be at this convention.
Oh, I love a bit of US politics. As they say, it's the greatest show on earth. Not always a healthy show, but a great show nevertheless. And look, no one does showbiz as well as the US, and everything's completely over the top, of course. And so they're having this massive convention that goes on for days, and a cavalcade of speakers in
Oprah
trade.
Winfrey.
So we've had all sorts, sorry.
Oprah Winfrey.
All look, you name them, they've had a crack. So of course, there's that some of the usual suspects in Democrat circles. So probably Barack Obama remains the single most popular Democrat figure amongst the base, and of course, he gave a really spirited and no, very few people can speak like Barack Obama. So that was always a highlight, and it's of course Michelle spoke as well. We had Tim Walz give a folksy coach-like pep talk. I mean, he loves talking about how he used to be a football coach. And his brief is to communicate to middle America, as they say in the US. He's competing for the same voters as JD Vance, the vice president nominee for Trump. And then you've got all, a mixture of some former Republicans who've got no time for Trump, who are getting a leg up. And then it's, look, you've got celebrities, Oprah Winfrey fired up, of course, and others. So it's made for an interesting bunch, that's for sure. But clearly, of course, the climax is Kamala Harris
Well,
coming on stage to accept the nomination, which is happening literally any moment now, Michael.
I have to say I'm wanting to get Tim Walz to reprise his speech for the Fremantle Dockers match on Sunday afternoon. We may well have to win that one to finish up in the eight, and perhaps Coach would be the man to get them over the final yards, Martin, as they put it. But how do you think Carmela is going, leaving aside all the enthusiasm, although you can't, I suppose?
Oh, it is all part of the story in a way. The real story is that the race remains very close, and Kamala Harris has a very slight lead, usually around 1 or 2 points on the polling average. They have enormous number of polls in the US, all some of that lean slightly right, or some that lean slightly left. Some are in person, some are mail in, all of those things. And so they do polling averages, and they show that Trump at the moment is trailing by a point or two behind Harris, and the same is mirrored across probably about two-thirds or three-quarters of the swing states. So some like Florida, Trump remains in front, has a significant lead, but on about the majority of them, Harris is in front, but only fairly slightly, Michael. So it's going to be a tight race, and it's still very much up in the air. It's worth though, comparing this to before Biden dropped out, and there was a slight lead, probably about a 2 to 3 point lead to Trump. So there has been a significant turnaround since that time, and that's where that momentum and enthusiasm that you talked about comes into play. Can Kamala Harris and continue that all the way to voting day? With a tick over 70 days left.
It seems from what one reads, and indeed from what one hears from Trump's own mouth, that his paid for advisors are telling him to talk about policy, to talk about the economy, to talk about migration, to talk about the border, and stop making vile attacks on individuals and saying ridiculous things. But he can't help himself. He went to a convention
No, I think
the
that's
other night. So, on the other hand, it seems that speaking in generalities and feeling the vibe is the way Kamala Harris's people are doing it. But she's going to have to talk about policy, isn't she, at some point?
Oh, absolutely. And there are some tricky things that you'll have to navigate. So there's two things that she hasn't done yet. One is she hasn't done a sit-down critical interview, which is important because that's where you establish your credentials. Can you answer the tough questions?
You don't
And
mean
it
with
can't.
Elon. You don't mean with Elon Musk, I take it.
No, it won't be with Elon Musk. I don't think so. So I think there's an expectation that she'll be doing something like that. And the second thing, of course, is she's got to debate Trump, at least two occasions. So that's the other thing that hasn't happened yet. So they'll both be interesting milestones. There's probably another interesting milestone coming up. There's at least one debate between the two vice president nominees, in Waltz and Vance. So keep an eye out for that. So there's some really interesting events to take place between now and polling day.
I'm guessing that when Trump does come up to the first debate with Kamala Harris, he'll be playing the sort of figure he started out playing in his first debate with Biden. Namely, he'll look a little bit morose, he'll be looking a bit glum, and he'll try to avoid saying anything nasty and try to convey the impression that I'm not really sure why I need to be here because it's ours, I've won it, and the last one was stolen from me.
That was an incredible line, really. We've got enough votes. We don't need any more. We just need to make sure that the Democrats don't steal it from us. Look, that's a really unhealthy line to be trotting out, and it does make people suspicious that he's sowing the seeds for contesting the entire electoral process again, which is unhealthy in a democracy. Of course, it is healthy if there's really significant evidence, but the courts have looked at this really carefully. On for the 2020 election, and those court challenges weren't substantiated at the time. So he's that was very interesting line from Trump going forward, and it'll be. But I also wonder whether it's also a sensible line, Michael, because you do need, if you get absolutely walloped, then it's much harder for you to maintain that the election was robbed. If it's fairly close and you can somehow argue that enough votes in a couple of key states were dubious or contested, etc., you might have a bit more wind in your sails. So it's not a helpful thing for him to be telling his supporters, you don't really need to worry about turnout. We've got the votes we want. I would be advocating that all your supporters turn out to vote to give yourself the best possible chance.
It's always said, it's become common knowledge now in places like Australia that American elections are not compulsory. The voters don't have to turn up. Getting the voters out is the big thing. And ease of voting, of course, is an important issue. So even if you can get your voters to the polling station, you want to make sure they don't have trouble in being able to cast their vote. Do we have any worries on either count?
Look, the if there is significant grounds for being critical of the American election process, they don't have an Australian Electoral Commission like we have. Their FEC is not the same. They don't have uniform standard laws, standard regulations around voting. So voting closes in centres in different states. Voting closes at different times, and there's different deadlines for getting votes in. So it can be quite confusing, and that then sows the seeds for contesting elections. There are actually a range of ways they could clean up their process, but Try telling them that. I don't think they're inclined to take that much advice from a small place like Australia. But well, I think we do run our elections very well here.
But Martin, what do you reckon, just from where we are now, with not so many days to go until the election, the key issues are going to be, or is it just going to be a personality election?
Oh, there's certainly an element to personality election, and it's a what we would call a tribal election. It's an election where a lot of people have made up their minds. A lot of people have decided that they're, culturally, politically, connected to Trump and will vote for him or vote for Harris and the Democrats. So there's already people that are sort of rusted on, but there's still plenty of people that either may or may not turn up, depending on what happens, or are genuine swing voters. So they're the people that will decide the election. And I think there's enough of that the campaigns in the remaining days will be really, really important. You mentioned policy. To date, so much of the discussion has been personality based. It is a slight, I mentioned that US is the greatest showbiz on earth, but it's also a place where a lot of personal attacks and the like emanate. There hasn't been a lot of policy rolled out. There's been some suggestion on certain forms of tax increases, particularly in corporate tax in the US, which will both enthuse some of the supporters of the Democrats, but also might not be popular in business. That have come out of Kamala Harris's campaign, for instance. And unsurprisingly, most of the policy focus on Trump's campaign has been on immigration.
But Martin, I'm thinking that, as I expressed the opinion in our last discussion, that the first of the upcoming debates between Trump and Harris is going to be critical for each of them. It'll be one of the first opportunities for the American electorate at large, not to mention us, to hear her speak in more than a smile and a sentence, and to address some of the big issues, as well as to deal with whatever Trump decides to sort of rail on the night, like he did with Hillary Clinton all those years ago. It's going to be a fascinating first debate. It could make or break Harris.
I think it's a, people read a lot into these things because you've got a national TV audience. The convention speech is seen as like the litmus test. She'll give a lot of speeches between now and polling day, but this is one that a lot of people will remember. And the curious thing about Kamala Harris is, even though she's been vice president for 4 years, the sense in the US that's coming through various channels is a lot of people don't feel that they know her extremely well. She was very loyal to Biden. She very much toed the line and followed him and his policy settings and sentiments. So this is her chance to really stake her own case and jump out of Biden's shadow and say what she stands for. So it's a pretty important speech for her.
Rushing straight across the Pacific at the light of speed of sound or light or something, Martin, and arriving in Canberra. Federal Parliament went back to business the other day. I'm not sure whether it's been unedifying. It hasn't been overly edifying, as far as I could tell. How does Albo stand? Is everything he does at the moment all about an election in March or so next year?
Well, it is one of the challenges of the 3 year electoral process that you get about 2.5 to 2.75, maybe 2.5 years in. And then all of a sudden, a lot of things stop, and you've got to later like focus on the election for 6 months. So, one sixth of your term is at least is solely campaigning again for a re election. So, we're pretty much entering that phase. I don't expect there to be major, new policy initiatives before the election that are outside the campaign. In other words, that will be implemented immediately. Most of them will be targeted on re-election and used for campaign purposes. So Albo has got some challenges, some significant challenges. He entered as prime minister with a fairly thin majority anyway, a majority that was quite reliant on winning a surprisingly high number of seats in WA. And of course, WA is a challenging state normally for Labor, so they've got to hang on to those seats. But with this narrow majority, you've only got a couple of seats flipping, and then suddenly he's back into minority. And I think that that's probably his biggest challenge is to maintain an absolute majority. Because the Liberals, who lost a lot of teal seats, a lot of those inner city independent seats last time round, they're not looking like getting a lot of those back. Now, they might win a couple of them back, but they're a fair way off forming government. So I think that's the biggest challenge for Albanese is to maintain 76 minimum seats when he's only on 77 at the moment. Beyond that, he's got to deal with some of those burning policy questions. I mentioned about the cost of living. In Sydney, where I'm speaking to you from today, an average house is $1.4 million. And that's just an obscene amount of money that a lot of people just don't have. Our median house price in Perth is 700,000. So that's a big difference. So we think that our cost of living is a problem in Western Australia. It's even more of a bit of a problem here in Sydney and also Melbourne. So, and there's a lot of electorates that happen to be in Sydney, Melbourne, Mike, Michael. So he's got to deal with those sorts of issues. And for governments, dealing with those issues takes time and it's really difficult. So he's got, I think that that's actually his single biggest issue. There's got hot political issues, taking Gaza and refugees or not, and things which burn up a lot of airtime. But I think when people are thinking about how well they're doing, that will feed into how they vote next year.
And on the flip side of that coin, I suppose, is there any change in the strategy we've been commenting on so far as the coalition is concerned?
Not a lot. I mean, they have talked a lot about cost of living, but critiquing it and then finding easy solutions is another thing. So again, I wouldn't think that they've got ready-made solutions to the problem. Peter Dutton's focused heavily on immigration again as a fallback issue, because it provides an avenue for criticism and also is popular amongst the MPs in his own party room. So I think that's expect him to keep speaking about that, and it's in part an effort to unify his team as much as anything else. I think he'll focus on that. But what I haven't seen, Michael, is a strategy to win back those inner city seats that they lost. I've seen nothing really in that respect, other than they have selected some different candidates in those seats, some younger candidates, some female candidates, but I haven't seen a big shift in the policy settings.
Well, during the week at a dinner, Elbo decided to make a joke. Pretty pathetic joke, I have to say. It fell into the zinger category. Not very well written, not very well delivered. Related to the live sheep trade, reflecting on the fact that he was eating dead meat. Roger Cook, the WA Premier, thought this was pretty poor and is actually on radio, asked for the PM to apologise to all the livestock producers in Western Australia. And if you talk to anyone who wanders outside Perth and meets farmers who are in the business of raising sheep and the like, they're all deeply offended. What do you make of it all?
This is an issue above, there's not many issues where you go, that's a real WA issue. It's not a national issue. This is one. So live sheep export is largely confined to Western Australia, and it's something that many West Australian farmers feel very passionate about. There's not only the ones that are intricately involved in it, but there's a sort of sense that it's one of those litmus test issues for whether you're listening to WA agriculture. That's where it feeds into a broader narrative, Michael. So that's why I think you're seeing on this one issue a stark difference between federal and state Labor. And that's why you're seeing Roger Cook eager to stand up to the federal government on this. But federal Labor is not changing their view on this. It was an election commitment and they're pursuing it vigorously. So I don't think there's going to be much change. But it's deeply unpopular in regional WA. But of course, federal Labor doesn't hold any seats in regional WA, whereas state Labor does. So that's why you're getting these really different policy positions.
And how is state Labor otherwise travelling? If you read the newspaper formerly known as the West Australian, referred to by many people as really a sales catalogue for a well-known company. You'd think that they're a shoe-in here, but are they?
I think that they're still in quite a strong position, absolutely. And there's a lot of talk around the traps that the Liberals are aiming for a 2017 type result, which is a bad result, I've got to say, for the Liberals, a bad result. It was at that time Labor's biggest landslide win. So I can't see how that's a good result. So I'd be much more confident about Roger Cook's re-election than Anthony Albanese's. So I think that he's in a relatively strong position. But I do think outside the metropolitan area, I think he may well struggle. And I expect that's where the Liberals and Nationals will make some gains. And I also think they're going to win back some of their heartland as well. The question is whether they can win back more than that.
And I guess we'll wait and see, Martin. It's been a fascinating week in politics, the US, in Canberra, even here in sleepy old Perth. In Fremantle, though, where we normally are, it's all pretty quiet. It's a lovely time of the year, Martin. And I look forward to seeing you back here next week.
Looking forward to it, Michael. Very much so.
Thanks for joining me today.
It's good to talk to you.